B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, fourth and final hour, Felger and Maserati. Big Jamari from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Maz and I on location. We're brought to you by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. We threw for centers earlier in the day on the Felger Maz Big Board. You can catch that segment on the podcast, 98.5thesportshub.com or the app. There's been some discrepancy. There's been a little bit of controversy on your third chuck there, Maz. Apparently you called out a name that you didn't quite hit. Do we just want to set the record straight on this?
Well, so what I said was that we would try to take someone from the bottom of the list because I didn't want to just hit the guys who were at the top of the draft board, not realizing at that time that some of these guys at the top of the center position were actually projected to go in the middle rounds, right? They're not necessarily elite prospects. So I hit Carlos Ruiz, who is number three on the board.
Cesar Ruiz.
I'm sorry. Carlos Ruiz is the boxer, right? Anyway, So I said we would take the guy at the top of the bottom part of the board who was number nine on our list. That is why we have the discrepancy. But you guys tell me how you want to go. We just need to get it on the record before the draft hits.
What I've always done in the past is whoever we say on the air and read about on the air is what we go with. You know, sometimes the marker splatters. Sometimes you could say it hit this guy or it hit that guy. It's a spur of the moment decision, Maz. You just got to sort of feel it. You pick the name and you say it, and whatever you read out loud is the name that I've always gone with.
Okay, so we're going to go with our initial report then.
Correct.
All right. I mean, I have people texting, hitting up the Twitter feed, like, you hit Cesar Ruiz, we just didn't see it correctly. And just didn't, you know, this is who I think we should go with, but okay.
I mean, I'll leave it to the group, but this is not a dictatorship.
I think we should go with both. It gives us more opportunities to be right. And really, well, that's what it's about, is our big board is right.
Maz, you were the chucker.
Put them both on the board. All right, so if you want me to tell you what I really believe is that...
No, Maz, lie to us. Please lie to us.
We called out number nine, Jimmy, but I believe the board is trying to tell us something. That's what I believe, that the board called to us and told us that Cesar Ruiz is a man of importance in this particular draft, and so I think we should add him to our list.
Okay, we're going to put him on the board. Cesar Ruiz, a 6'4", 320-pound fellow from Michigan. Let me just give you a real quick thing. He's got a great blend of size and movement skills for the pivot with the ability to fit a number of schemes. He is sturdy enough to anchor and hold up against power, but he has a good snap and step quickness and
love
is mobile enough
and step.
To get out and seal on reach blocks, weak points. Ruiz needs to become more consistent with his pass protection technique and more disciplined when ranging out into space. He has issues against quickness on the interior, and while he has the ability to recover, he too often lunges or grabs. He similarly gets unnecessarily off balance when working in space.
These are all nice ways of saying he's a turnstile.
Right. Okay, so put him on the board. You can weigh back on that if you like. We're talking about the return of baseball and sports in general. Feels like there's been movement. Robin Lemonster, lead us off this hour. What do you got?
Hi, guys. A couple things. I'll be quick, I promise. The baseball end, I totally think baseball is going to be the first sport that can come back just because they don't have the social distancing worries that the other major leagues do. It's you know, largely an individual, you know, separated event. On a side note, however, I work for a company that makes the testing kits for Abbott Lab. We don't make the chemical itself in the test, but we make the plastic pieces.
Yeah.
And the orders that we're running right now we're contracted for, I think it's 500,000 per week, and we're on our second week already. So we're talking about a million every 2 weeks, 2 million in a month. It's not going to be long before these tests are readily available to anybody who wants them.
Okay, this is what I'm saying, Maz, and thanks for the call, Rob. Do the leagues know it? Did Trump let them know? Like, whether Trump let them know or not,
I think something has come up here where they have it in their minds. And the Passan story says it many times, that they're working in conjunction with health officials, with the government. And that NBA story that I wrote, that I've read you, that work in conjunction with the CDC and, you know, federal officials. So they're getting some cues here from the feds, whether that was Trump on the call or not. They have a feeling, the leagues do, that these tests are coming. And they're going to be able to administer them to their players and get these leagues off the ground coming up in a month or two. And that's just what it feels like is happening there. You had another conspiracy theory about that Trump call?
Well, Sadu, I just wonder in that the testing to me is critical. Obviously, they can't get any of these leagues back into play unless they have the testing. But I also wonder, maybe the government is offering some sort of incentive. And I say... maybe there's a financial benefit to it in that Trump says to them, hey, look, we need you guys back on the field. We need you back in the arenas for lots of reasons. And you cited the NHL, for example, to say the NHL without spectators is going to lose money, as is baseball. And so they could just as easily come to some sort of salary agreement with the players and say, nope, we're only going to pay you this because we can't make the revenue back in the stadiums and the arenas. And the government says, look, we'll subsidize the losses. We want you back sooner rather than later, and we're willing to subsidize some of the losses. We'll work with you on the tests, but you get cracking right now with your unions and your players' associations. Try to get this thing moving sooner rather than later, because there is a huge psychological benefit and tangential benefit to the country to have these leagues up and running again, and we'll help you with the money on some level.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, look, obviously, there's lots of areas that require government funding in a crisis like this way before sports teams do. But there had to be some business discussion that took place there.
That's why I said, to start the show, there had to be a business end to that conversation. It just couldn't have been a pep talk. It couldn't have been Trump talking about him watching classic sports and enjoying watching the old baseball. Silver said this last night. There had to have been nuts and bolts, money discussions, and, sort of lay of the land discussions.
You'll get the test because you're the best.
Whatever. the reason they're pushing ahead with looking at Vegas for basketball or North Dakota for hockey or Arizona for baseball, because they have a feeling they'll be able to do it, and the feds have given them that nod. That's what I'm hoping for. Ricky in Winchester on the NHL. Hi, Ricky.
Sorry. I was sliding on Tinder. I got a proposal for the NHL just right here in our backyard. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but how about the New England Sports Center in Marlboro?
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were yanking me. Maz, the New England Sports Center in Marlboro, you mentioned this place earlier.
Well, so I think he was yanking you. I don't know that they could hold up, host NHL teams there. But it's just to give people an idea, it's a facility that has like six or eight rinks. They're all connected. There's a million locker rooms. Something like that that has better hotel space in the area and certainly isn't in a relative hotbed of virus outbreak. How many cases did say there were total in North Dakota? Like 200?
Yeah, that's it. They have the second. North Dakota has the second lowest incidence of anywhere in the country.
I mean, that is really ideal. But the point is, if there's a facility like that in Marlboro, Massachusetts, then there's got to be one in a more remote area that could offer something similar.
Yeah, why not Hockey Town Saugers or Skate 3 in Chelmsford, huh?
We can go to the Kowloon for dinner.
How many people can you put up at that Sheraton on the Mass Pike there? And that's the only hotel I know that's anywhere near Marlboro. Like, not exactly the best spot, but people are into this returning to Marlboro thing. I got an email on it. Paul in Marlboro. Go ahead, Paul. What are your thoughts?
Hey, Felger. Hey. Am I on the air?
You are.
Yes. Marlboro actually has the second most hotel rooms in the entire state besides Boston.
Is that true?
Honest to God, look it up. Oh, yeah. They have giant tournaments there all the time with people from all around the country.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. Do you think it's going to work in freaking Marlboro?
Yeah. How do you think? How do you think that? Oh, I don't know. Sidney Crosby is going to feel staying at the Holiday Inn. I don't think that that's going to float. Yeah, we're going to go to Chick-fil-A. You want to come, Sid?
Yeah. Gets picked up by his Uber. You ever been on 495? I'm going to give you a spin.
I just don't feel like that's in the cards. North Dakota, I mean, it's certainly North Dakota ain't Paris, but that feels like a more likely sort of thing than Marlboro Mass. I don't know.
Why don't you invite Malkin too? Because there's a Taco Bell there, and I think he likes the pintos and cheese.
Steve in Portland, go ahead, Steve. You're up next.
Hey, I got a quick Brady question, but first with baseball, what do you think about miking the plays up like last year's All-Star game? That worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's what they said in the story. They're going to have to, without crowd noise, they're going to have to get creative, and hopefully they do.
Yeah. Hey, with Brady real quick, it's hard to dump on him, but do you think that the veteran players probably kind of got sick of the me, you know, not showing up for the passing champs, kind of being a detriment a little bit? Do you think they got sick of that a little bit, or they're kind of behind Stidham now, so...
Okay, Steve, I think the coaches got sick of it. I don't get any sense that his teammates, you know, I think the younger players were freaked out by Brady, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they felt this pressure that we can't please him, and if we drop it once, he'll never throw it to us again. And I think the younger players had a quote-unquote problem with Brady. They were just more intimidated or freaked out by his presence. I never got that sense from the veterans. I definitely get that sense from Belichick and the coaches. And here's Estelle. Let's see if she's back on the line. Estelle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on the air. Hi. What do you got? Hi.
Love you guys. I'm a big Patriots fan. I'm 89 years old. And I want to say we waited for Brady for so long. And I love him. I can't fault him. I'm going to watch him play at Tampa Bay, and I might give up the Patriots after all these years.
I was going to ask you, are you a Buccaneer fan or are you a Patriot fan next year?
Oh, I think I'm going to be a Buccaneer. I'm sure I'm watching Brady. I'm sure. I love him. We waited so long for him. Please, I can't believe it. I'm just heartbroken. I'm heartbroken.
Okay, Estelle, thanks for the call. Be safe. I think there's certainly people like that, Maz, but I think, again, like I said earlier, and we'll pick this up again tomorrow, I think there's a little bit of a turn against Brady here recently in Boston, maybe with the more that he speaks and the more he sort of slips out there. I don't think it's playing very well here in Boston.
No, and I'll tell you what, I wasn't sure if you had the previous caller still on, so forgive me for jumping back to that call, but yeah. The young guys with Brady too, let's just say you're Jacoby Myers or you're N'Keal Harry, and the whole thing's over and the two of you are you know, you're sitting out having a beer, shooting the breeze. Wouldn't you be saying to the other one, dude, I don't know about you, but Tom Brady wasn't what I thought he was. I'd heard all these great things about Brady and the kind of leader he was and how he worked with everybody, and I thought he was kind of a dick to us.
Yeah.
So, like, but I could see that. I think the disconnect had reached that point where Brady had sort of gotten above it all, and these young guys are walking in saying, this isn't the guy that, you know, that I watched when I was 10 years old. This is a totally different guy now. And I could totally see how something like that would happen.
Yo, definitely. I think the divide was, though, with the younger guys. I don't get that sense, like, you know, I think Edelman cared that he didn't show up in the offseason or any of those guys, for crying out loud. No way. But again, Tom Brady, I'm with Howard Stern tomorrow, so we should have some good Brady material to pick up. But coming up next, after Murray's update, and there is some breaking news in the world of sports, replay adjustments coming to the NFL next year. Chris Sale speaks on getting surgery, an elective surgery, during a time of a pandemic. That's on the table. And when we come back, what's going to happen when a player, if these leagues resume, and a player invariably tests positive, because you know that's going to happen. Something is going to slip through the cracks. It just does. It just has to. What's the response of the fellow players, and what's going to happen to those leagues? An interesting thought on that with Adrian Wojnarowski, again, right after the update.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Colin Coward of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Maz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Maz.
You guys do a great show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And this would obviously be something that would be completely off the record with anybody you'd talk to, because I don't think anyone would want to go on the record. But I think any league is going to just have some tolerance for understanding that you can't possibly know, going back into play, that everyone's, no one has this, because that's just not going to happen. And if we have to wait to go back into the world to do anything before no one has this, then no one's ever going to be able to do anything. So I guess it's just, what's your tolerance as a league to just dealing with whatever that's going to look like? Are those things you have in terms of conversations with people?
Yeah, I had that conversation with a general manager of a team today, and you know, he made the point that, you know, players are always taking risk when they go out on the floor. They're risking, you know, physical injury. When it's flu season, you know, they're risking catching the flu. There's risks in a lot of different areas for players, and there's no question that there was going to be risk here for them. But I know this, Scott, there is a tremendous motivation, you know, from the league office to teams to the Players Association to try to find a way to resume play at some point this spring / summer and crown a champion. They're determined to try to find a way, but certainly, you know, no one knows for sure whether that's going to be possible. There still remains a great deal of uncertainty about it, but they do grind away at it every day.
You know, that whole piece I'm interested in, even with rapid testing, Maz, even with, you know, before anyone enters the biosphere, you test them. And if anyone tests positive subsequently, you test all their teammates, right? Because again, right now the guidelines are you test positive, you're quarantined for 14 days, and anyone you've come in contact with, it needs to be quarantined for 14 days. So that shuts down a whole team. That shuts down any team they've played against. That shuts down the whole league, right? So you can't come back as long as those are the current guidelines, right? Because it's just, you know, why schlep everyone out to Grand Forks, North Dakota, or Las Vegas, Nevada, or Happy Valley, Arizona, just to have one guy test positive and the entire thing shut down? You can't do it. So the guidelines have to change. And, you know, here's hoping that the guidelines become, with these tests or maybe treatments, that it's not an automatic 14-day quarantine for anyone that you've come in contact with. You can test people that you've come in contact with and tell whether you've gotten it or not. And then, therefore, the leagues can keep going on. So hopefully that changes. But even short of that, Maz, even short of that, I think the players have to be willing to play ball. And when I say play ball, I mean sort of accept the fact a couple of them might get sick and they might contract it, and don't lose your mind over it. Don't make a scene over it, right? Don't sue us. Don't file a grievance. Don't go public. Like, if we're all going to agree to do this, then accept the fact that something might slip through the cracks. You might get it, you know, given the fact that you're all young and healthy with strong immune systems, presumably, no pre-existing conditions, you're not elderly, you know, you should be fine, and just accept the fact that this might happen. And I wonder if that's a under-the-table precondition of these leagues coming back.
Oh, I think there's absolutely something like that going on. And with regard to players accepting it, you know, if they test positive, the other thing that we may be able to know after some period of time is who's already had it and not vulnerable to it again. And so those guys who don't have to worry about, we send them out there and, you know, they're good and here we go. And we just plow ahead. And there is, you know, somewhere in the middle of this, and it's probably because of the testing issue that you talked about, we all got sucked into this idea of, well, then what if everybody gets it again? The fact is that there's constant risk for all these athletes in every sport they play all the time, but we don't dwell on it. We just accept it as a quote-unquote hazard of the profession. And I understand that this thing is a little different. It's a lot different in many ways.
Well,
but if we can test more regularly, and these guys in their peak physical years are reduced in minimal risk relative to people who are older and have underlying health issues, then there's lots of reasons for them to go back out there and play.
Do you think the general public would accept the parameters changing, though? Because, I mean, in the NBA, the precedent was already set with how they handled Rudy Gobert from the Jazz. You immediately had to shut it down. So I think you'd have people screaming for the league or whatever league it was that got back up. If they found out someone got, you know, tested positive for it, they'd be doing the same thing, shut it down. If they didn't, the outcry would be real and, I think, very difficult to navigate.
Well, so this is why I'm saying I would think that the guidelines would have to be universal. In other words, all of us would have the same guidelines, meaning You have it, 14-day quarantine. You've come in contact. That person has to be quarantined for 14 days. It changes for all of us because we're able to go get the test.
Yeah.
And we're able to see if we've been exposed to it or have it or have overcome it and have the antibodies. And maybe there's even a treatment to go alongside of it. So if you do have a pre-existing condition, it's no longer fatal. And, you know, I would think that the conditions and the guidelines would have to change for all of us. But even on top of that, I think, you know, I wonder how much different it is, Maz. I mean, these guys, and it's, you know, it changes by the sport, but there's tremendous health risk with what some of these guys are doing. Never, you know, the long-term, you know, implications of concussions and head injuries and brain trauma and brain disease is those are huge implications that they sign off on. Never mind the risk of spinal cord injuries and those sort of things. So it's you know, next to those things, I wonder how they would view this. I wonder, knowing some of those guys, how tough they are or impervious they think they are, I bet some of those guys would be like, I give no damn about no corrupt. Give me a cold. I can handle a head cold. No problem. Let's go play ball. Like, I know a lot of guys would feel that way.
Well, so the average person, right, we tend to, one of the things that is most frightening about this whole pandemic is the unknown. We don't know a lot about it. We're learning a little bit as we go with each passing day, but the unknown is always scary. But to Murray's point, look, Murray, there are always going to be people who complain. We all know that, but I also think there's the probability here. We are going to gain more information as we go forward. And so aside from the fact that we'll have more testing and we'll be able to get a better grasp on who is and who is not contagious, I think we will also have a better understanding of, again, if you get it and we're able to do antibody testing, can you not get it again? Can you go back out in the workforce? And that is sort of the understanding and the belief at this stage. So the hope is that 6 weeks from now, we'll have a much better understanding of it, or at least a little better understanding that allows us to make decisions.
All right, let's wrap it up with some quick phone calls here if we can. Max in the truck on baseball going to Arizona. Hi, Max.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going? So I think if they move to Arizona and a guy tests positive on one team.
Oh, I think I did that by accident. That's my fault, Max. I'm sorry. So if one guy tests positive on one team, it can't be the kind of thing where I have to shut the league down or shut the team down. You can't start a league if that's the parameter, because someone's going to test positive, someone's going to slip through the cracks. So there's got to be – that just sort of picks up our previous conversation, Max. I'm sorry about that. But I think there's got to be new guidelines on that. Andy in the car. Go ahead, Andy.
Hey, Felger. My name's Andy. I'm a respiratory therapist, and I work at Massachusetts General Hospital. I'm actually in the car right now, and I'm on my way to work. You know, Felger, I just got to tell you, you have to be careful what you're saying about testing everybody, okay? First thing that you need to know is that number one, the test kits are only 70% accurate, okay? And you can be infected with the virus, show no symptoms, and still have a negative test come back. The virus itself is actually, it can be dormant, and it has an incubation period of up to 2 weeks. So you can be walking around talking to people and passing the virus on and not knowing. So you have to be careful with that.
I understand, Andy, and thanks for the work that you do. We appreciate it. I'm pushing for the leagues to come back. I'm pushing for people to get back to work. I'm hoping it works. But if it doesn't make sense and it's not safe, I'm also trusting that our researchers and doctors who know better will tell us it's not safe. But in the meantime, I admit, I'm trying to push it. I am. Wayne in Grafton, I know he's pushing it on a daily basis. Wayne, what do you got for us today?
Yeah, I need to see some freaking hockey. I don't care if it's in East Manitoba or butt crack Manitoba. You know, I mean, hey, I'm 73 years old. I mean, no virus is going to invade my body. I have a constant flow of alcohol in it. But, Mike, I see your setup there. It's good. You know, I work at a Packy part-time, and I'm a dog walker. I can't do that anymore. Would you want me coming into your house? But I have a proposition for you. I can come over with some Miller Lite Tall Boys, some Romeo and Julieta cigars, some smoked kielbasa, meet the family, walk your dog. How does that sound?
not horrible, Wayne. Not horrible. Maybe someday. Maybe someday we'll get that done. My dog been walking around in the background here a little bit. Let's grab Matt in Salem. He's up next. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So I got a quick question for you. So everyone's talking about going down to Arizona or Las Vegas to play these sports. Now, my question to you is, what happens if somebody, let's say, tears their ACL, God forbid, or somebody does something like Gordon Hayward did? What are they going to do then? They're going to fly somebody out of there? They're going to be able to have surgery there? You know, some of these injuries, you have to have surgery right away. So what would happen?
So wouldn't it just be business as usual on that end, Mass?
Well, so in North Dakota, what, they don't have hospitals? I mean, I'm not trying to be a wise ass.
Yeah,
but
no.
So look, first of all, these injuries are obviously very rare. And if we're talking about a Gordon Hayward type of injury, it's a rare injury. Lots of guys get sprained ankles, pulled muscles, even blow out a knee.
Mass, let me just stop. I mean, hopefully the hospitals are not overrun when they come back. Like if the healthcare system is stretched to the degree that they're still saying no elective surgeries or no, you know, no surgeries on broken, but then you shouldn't come back. Like, I mean, the whole idea is that conditions across across the board have improved, right?
Absolutely right. And again, remember that in theory we are in, and let's use the NHL as an example, we're in a more remote area. So that hospital as it stands is not under duress. That, you know, they are essentially operating at something close to business as usual, or something a hell of a lot closer to it than the places that are hotspots. So, look, he asked a good question. I'm not trying to dismiss it. I'm just saying that I think this is part of the reason you pick remote areas. And again, we're not talking about you know your point's dead on. We're not talking about today. We're talking about 2 months from now.
Okay. When we come back, I want to play some sound I thought was pretty articulate. From some of our leaders, not our leaders, leaders in general on the coronavirus and the situation going forward. When we come back, and coming back, I'm going to play you a cut from someone. I have to say that I never thought in a million years that we would play on the Felger and Maserati sports radio program, but you'll hear it just the same. That's coming up after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
I hope in the years to come, everyone will be able to take pride in how they responded to this challenge. And those who come after us will say the Britons of this generation were as strong as any. That the attributes of self-discipline, of quiet, good-humoured resolve, and a fellow feeling still characterize this country. The pride in who we are is not a part of our past. It defines our present and our future. We will succeed, and that success will belong to every one of us. We should take comfort that while we may have more still to endure, better days will return. We will be with our friends again. We will be with our families again. We will meet again. But for now, I send my thanks and warmest good wishes to you all.
You know who that is, Murray?
That's the Queen Mum.
Yeah, two reasons to play it. One is to get Murray to speak in his British accent, which I think is one of the finest British accents I've ever heard.
Which one? You like the one that's like the Shropshire Slasher? Even at 93, the Queen Mum still brings me to tears, yeah? Let's all raise a pint to the Queen Mum!
That's the one I like. Mickey Greenhead from the Green Street Hooligans.
That's right. And you'll never walk alone. You'll never walk alone.
Do you know she has been the Queen of England for 68 freaking years?
Amazing.
You notice that? I think that's right. I think it's 60. I think she's held the throne for 68 years.
That's right, Michael. The Queen stoically presenting from Windsor Castle. It was a rare televised speech that evoked the darkest days of World War II.
Exactly. Poor Prince Charles has been waiting for her to kick it for about 20 years.
her son, Prince Charles, is 71. Yeah. So she's held it for 68. That's, I think, only the fourth or fifth time she's addressed the nation, other than, again, just reading about it. She, I guess, does a Christmas message every year or something. But, like, that's only she's only done it a handful of times. And she referenced one of the first times she did it, 1940, when they sent British kids to the countryside because, you know, they were afraid of being bombed by the Germans, which they ultimately were, obviously. But, like, so she spoke to the nation in 1940.
Send the little ones away. We're worried about the Blitz.
And then she spoke to them the other day. 68 years. Like, that's kind of cool.
And,
I mean,
and there was something apparently with the outfit, like the brooch that she wore, like that she apparently there was some meaning apparently to those people because they take the monarchy so seriously over there. It's like local olds with the Kennedys here. But with the brooch that she wore, I think she got it from her mother. Like there was something behind it. It's like those people see it and they're like, oh, wonderful. Everything will be great.
Well, but, you guys know, I was over there during the holidays and I went to the Churchill Museum. There is something about that accent that just lends itself to eloquence. There's no question about it.
And that little speech, I got to tell you, for as much fun as we have with it, I had a little moment today. I mean, that line at the end, how beautifully written is that? We'll be with our friends again. We'll be with our family again. We will meet again. That's just, it should be well written, given, you know, it's mostly an ornamental, symbolic position she's in. And she's going to have the best people in the world writing for her.
Put so a little sparkle in your crown jewels.
It should be good. But that was good. That was eloquent. That was really lovely sentiment. And the whole speech was sentiment. Yeah, I mean, the whole sentiment of the whole speech was lovely. We will succeed and the success will belong to all of us. Like, that's what I'm looking for, a little inspiration there from our leaders. And again, I keep saying our leaders, but a leader, a world leader, and I don't even know if she's really that. Again, it's a symbolic position, but what, you're laughing at me? It was a lovely little speech.
No, I'm laughing because I'm just about to say, what, you mean our guy doesn't sound like that?
It's a little, maybe that's what I'm driving at, a little different. But then again, it's not like she makes any choices or is elected. It's a whole different thing. I'm not comparing the two. But I thought it was a lovely little speech. And that line at the end was, I think, a whopper, a tremendous line.
Better days will return, Felger. I'll take a crowbar to the head of a Juventus supporter. We'll be in the pubs again. We'll meet again. Yeah.
It gives Murray a chance to do his thing. The other one I wanted to hit was Adam Silver. So, again, we spoke about yesterday, back to Trump, about how the thing that he's saying about the cure can't be worse than the disease, I think that there's truth to that. I think there's a big conversation to have with that. And I think that there's a choice to be made with that. I don't think he's wrong to say it. I think, unfortunately, he's the wrong guy to say it because he's so divisive and so polarizing and really just spends most of his time just poleaxing his opponents and poleaxing anyone who doesn't share his worldview, that it's very hard for him to then bring everyone together because he spent most of his time just attacking the other side. So it's like you're really not a unifying presence, and I don't trust that he's going to be able to articulate that very important debate, which is the cure and the disease, and at what point is, you know, debilitating our economy causing more harm than saving lives in the short term with the virus. Like, that's a really important big conversation, and I just don't feel he's the one to really do it. Leave it to Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, who I think got closer to the bone and did a better job of articulating it. Jimmy, I think it's and of course I don't have it in front of me. I think it's number 6, Jimmy. We're skipping number 5. This is Adam Silver last night with Ernie Johnson at TNT on his Twitter feed. This is a longer chunk. It's like a 2 or 3 minute cut, but I think that Silver cuts closer to this conversation than I think we've heard previously. Go ahead, John.
But I also have tremendous belief, you know, in this country. I mean, what's amazing about Americans, not only is their resilience, but the spirit of innovation. And I know we have an incredible biotech industry. I mean, and I think we're going to see a new approach to a lot of these problems. And maybe we were a little bit behind. And again, this is a cruel wake-up call in many ways, given we're talking about an enormous number of human lives, but that we will come out of this better. There'll be precautions we can take. There's preparedness. I mean, even look what the scrambling that's going on now, state to state, in terms of N95 masks and ventilators. It's hard to imagine that now we won't build appropriate reserves going forward, so we're not in a similar position. Isolation unto itself is a public health issue. I mean, understandably, the experts have to rank these things. And first and foremost is dealing with this virus. And, you know, as all the national experts have said, if that requires separation, isolation, remaining at home, we're all prepared to do those things and make those sacrifices. But we shouldn't pretend it's not coming at a big cost. And it's not just economically when we talk about shutting down this country. I mean, you and I are perfect examples. We define ourselves by what we do. You know, it's a large part of who we are, and we'll get through it. But, and fortunately for us, we're doing our jobs right now. But for tens of millions of Americans, they are now out of work. And restarting this economy, even if this virus moves through faster than some of the models, it's still going to be incredibly difficult. It's going to require enormous government activity at the federal and state level, huge amounts of dollars, you know, that will be pushed into the economy. I mean, we're at $2 trillion already, and they're already talking about the next bill. I mean, there's a lot of long-term effects here that we're going to be living with for a long time.
Okay, I just think
Adam, very gracious of you to.
Well, okay, yeah, Jimmy, that's okay. You can cut it there. I just think he articulated and has sort of a. I feel like he has good command of the whole story and command of all facets of it, and sort of articulated that issue. You know, the effects of social isolation, and you know what a problem that is in and of itself, and why we have to do it. But there's a cost to it, and it's not just an economic cost. There's bigger issues to it, and about how work defines us, and it's important to go to work, and all the people that can't go to work. Never mind just the economic part of it, but the whole. You know, effect that has on society and how that has to be weighed against the measures we're taking right now against the virus. Like, it's a big, complicated thing. And I just feel like he's got a better command on it than some of our leaders do.
Well, so this is part of the reason why I think the sports are important. And so the people that are more clinical about it and aren't sports fans aren't going to put any emphasis on that. But there is and the word that, you know, Silver didn't use the word that people who are in isolation might have psychological issues or emotional issues, that working, there's a tremendous amount of self-esteem that's tied to work and earning a salary and providing for your family and earning a living. Those are things that provide us all with a sense of accomplishment. Oftentimes, they can also provide us with a sense of frustration. But the point is, for some measure of identity, and it varies from person to person, tied into what we do, there's tremendous benefit beyond the paycheck to going to work every day and being part of something that is productive. And when you take that away, again, I think there are people. And look, Mike, you joke about being alone, but you might enjoy distance a little more than most people do. Yeah, and I'm not laughing at you about it. I just think, you know, that's part of who you are. But there are people who are exactly the opposite. And that if you put them in isolation, and I'd put my father in this category, he doesn't like being alone. And so the isolation, I think, really can be difficult for people like that. And I think more people are on that side of it than on the side of it of isolating themselves.
Yeah, well, you know, and there's a balance there. So we isolate ourselves to protect people in the short term against the coronavirus. But what's the long-term damage done by isolating people or taking livelihoods away or taking away the thing that defines them, which for many of us is our work? And so I Adam Silver impresses me when I hear him talk, because I think he has command of it and I think he understands it. And anyway, I just wanted to play you that sound. Either way, the final word will come your way next.
Tell your sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best
Nobody.
Prices. And great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair
Nobody.
Tire. Nobody.
Nope.
All right, like many fans, we here at Felger and Maz want sports back, as some leagues obviously trying their damnedest to get back sooner than later. Obviously, the product will look a little bit different, but that would be good for everyone, right? Well, no, it's just not going to be good enough for some people, like Fred in Arizona.
Fred in Arizona. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, hey, guys. I've been out here 35 years, and this is not a good idea. May and June are very hot. July through August and September is humid with violent afternoon thunderstorms. I'll hang up and let you guys talk. Take care.
Really? All right. I thought it was the desert. It rains out there in Arizona in the summer, Maz? Good.
Like, look, again, this is one of those things that so if we're going to, then they shouldn't be playing baseball in Arizona at all.
That's why they built the roof.
Okay, but even so, like, look, again, this is not going to be perfect. And so people, well, no, you kids, it's too hot then. We can't do it then. Now the ice is going to be soft. No, can't do it. Can't. Like, this whole idea of no. I just, if you're going to have that attitude, then let's just all say slammed and clammed up in our houses here for the next 2 years. Let's just shut in now, not do anything new, let the economies die, and not try to come
Folks.
Up with a creative solution
right.
to anything. So I'll tell you what, here's one for you. If we're worried about the guys being in the heat too long, make all the games 7 innings. All of them. Play shorter games. Do that. That'll satisfy everybody. The players will be out there shorter, and the fans don't have to sit there in front of their TVs for 4 hours to watch a 9-inning game with their thumbs stuck in their ears.
It's going to be hot. Do you want baseball or not? The ice, the puck's going to jump a little bit. Do you want hockey or not? God! Don't you hate Maz people who just complain about everything? I can't stand those people. You know, unlike us, you're just always looking on the bright side.
So negative. So negative.
I hate complainers.
As usual, listening to that guy, okay? Yeah, guys, I've been out here 35 years. May and June are brutally hot, and then the summer's super humid. There's thunderstorms. Dude, what have you been there 35 years for? What are you, stupid? If it sucks that bad, get out of there. How bad can it be? If it sucks that bad, why are you living there?
Well, I don't have to deal with the winters no more. You take the good
God.
With the bad. You know what I mean?
It's like, really? That guy just, you know, he's frustrated like everybody else. He just wanted to call and pee all over our parade. That's what he wanted to do.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.